welcome to the Business Ramble, or whatever we end up calling this. If you have not met us yet, I'm Sarah Brum, and this is my co-founder and co-CEO, Amber Hamilton. Amber, give us a little
hi.
Amber and I's work takes us all over the startup ecosystem, working one-on-one with founders, collaborating with investors, and building out programming within the support network. But honestly, one of our most favorite parts is actually getting to have one-on-one conversations with founders where we can dive deep and actually troubleshoot the business challenges that they're facing. Every time we do this, these conversations are packed with insights and advice that we know can benefit everybody else. And we've tried sharing them via blog posts or LinkedIn posts, and it doesn't happen. And it's never quite as impactful. So we're like, you know what? Let's just hit record each week and talk it out. Our hope is that you'll find insight and value from these conversations. You can take something from it and put it back into use into your daily life. So whether you're a founder, an investor, or part of the startup ecosystem, this is for you. Let's dive in. So, Amber.
Good morning.
Good morning. I had a really interesting conversation the other day that got me thinking about partnerships. And I thought, there is no better way to start out this series than at the beginning, which is building business partnerships and the trust aspect that is really, I mean, you and I know it's absolutely make or break on this. So last weekend I went camping and I was chatting with a couple of people that were there. One is an entrepreneur, one's a former one. The one who is, she's doing like the Cody Sanchez model, you know, where they have the umbrella company and then they buy the quote unquote boring businesses and then make them profitable and overall like building revenue over time. We had a really good conversation about the nuances of partnerships, right? Like, so setting boundaries, knowing your roles, making sure those boundaries are upheld. And then later on, we were driving to go hike, and her mom, who used to co-own a dry cleaner, I was chatting with her, and she was telling me that in the past, although she technically was an owner, holding about like 25% of the company, she felt completely powerless. She was waiting for the other person who held a 75% stake to exert control. And that constant imbalance led her to question her role in the company. And she was asking me, like, how would you even begin to like manage this and mitigate it?
Yeah.
I think it's a really, really great question, right? Mm-hmm. And my first question was, okay, did they put in more money than you?
Mm-hmm.
And you had truly, you were still a partnership, or was it on paper, the split? And she's like, well, I put in more money, and on paper, she held 25%. They held 75%.
Yeah.
I thought that was an important detail. And I was like, okay, well, first, I feel like in order to answer it, like I had to back up and was like, let's talk about what 50-50 split partnership would be. And yeah. I thought it would be for you and I to kind of talk about like what we've done in place, because we got into business fairly quickly after knowing each other.
Yeah.
Which is not anything I would ever recommend to anyone.
Right.
Not because Amber's given me trauma.
Yeah. It's been a good partnership so far.
Fantastic. Like there's a lot of pieces in that, right? Yeah. And it's
well, and when we went into business together, we had also just met. It wasn't like we had any sort of previous friendship or working relationship or anything. We really went from meeting each other in September to launching a company together in January of that, you know, 4 months later. That was, yeah.
I mean, it was great, but
it was great, but it was risky. Yeah.
It was risky. And it was one of those things we had conversations early on where like we clicked immediately.
Yeah.
And we had talked about like, hey, look, wise, intuition wise, we're like, we absolutely trust each other.
Yeah.
But to be smart in business, have to work on more than that, right? We have to build the trust outside of just like my gut. And mm-hmm. we can't base it off all these like handshakes in the sky, which I feel like is mm-hmm. so normal in this industry. And it's detrimental in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, you and I have come up with a policy where we are saying we respect the relationship enough to mm-hmm. put it on paper.
Yep.
Which I feel like is the opposite of what a lot of people do. They go, well, I respect you. We don't need to put it on paper. Mm-hmm. It's like, no. Mm-hmm. I respect you. And because of that, mm-hmm. let's put it on paper.
Yeah. Well, and I think we were on another podcast where they were asking us this question. I think one of the ways that we really succeeded at the beginning in our partnership was that we had both personally in our personal lives done enough work. We could separate the business from who, like our personal lives, and say, okay, for the business, for the sake of the business, we need to put this stuff on paper. We need to have transparent conversations. We need to have kind of rules of engagement around how we're going to handle conflict. And it was we're going to hope for the best, but also be realistic and plan for the worst, because we've both seen things go sideways where nobody ever could see it coming. And, you know, you just don't know what the future is going to hold. And especially when you don't know someone super well, you know, you're like, I don't know if something, you know, a situation is going to arise and we're going to have, you know, diametrically opposed perspectives on it that we never saw coming, that we were making these assumptions. And so instead of assuming that all was just going to always go well, I think we very quickly and in our operating agreement put kind of those rules of engagement of, here are the things that we're agreeing to. And then we signed that.
Yeah. I mean, we started planning for, like you said, we plan for the worst during the best time.
Yes.
And I think as far as action items, like that's the very first thing. 50-50 split or not, right? Your number one thing is to go ahead and plan for things going sideways, mm-hmm. like you said. And you say, okay, one of us wants out. What do we do?
Yeah.
Right? One of us, we talked to our financial advisor the other day, and he was like, well, technically, if Amber dies, half the company goes to four adolescent boys, and now Sarah has to be in.
Ruh-roh.
I was like, oh, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
You know, like you have to plan for these things, because life does not follow your script.
No.
Business certainly doesn't follow your script. People really like to think that, but it doesn't. And so that was, you know, and that's like your fundamentals, right? Like, right. So in the business partnership, what we put down, here's what happens. Here's who gets what. Here's how we leave. Here's how we mitigate, like, if there's a disagreement, here's what we do. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing that we did was our decision-making process. It was like a chart. It's a flow chart. If we agree, this is what happens.
Mm-hmm.
If we disagree, and part of it was dependent on topic, here's what.
Yep.
And that started forming, and this is what we recommend to kind of everybody, is that forms a basis of what do we do. Depending on the topic, depending on the area of expertise, what if we can't agree on it? And what if it needs to be unanimous? You know, who do we take it to? Because we don't have anybody else. And maybe we don't have a board, but maybe we have a team, or maybe we have a set few advisors.
Mm-hmm.
And what we put into place is if we disagree, we would basically take it to the set team at the time that we felt like was appropriate, let them talk it out, come up with a decision collectively within that. And that was the decision moving forward. Right. That was where we were going with it. And I think, I mean, one, for me, that has always helped my peace of mind.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like, I think so much of us spend time of like, what ifs, right? I don't need to spend time as what ifs because we've mapped it out.
Yeah. Well, and I think one of the other things, in, even back to the work we've done personally, is I think that's a key component, because if you don't have two people that are coming to the table with the same, or at least in the same range of emotional IQ and health, you're going to be approaching it Like your ego is going to get in the way and you're going to want to do this self-preservation thing instead of, again, I think the thing that we do well is we go, okay, let's separate what's best for the business. What's the best decision for the business? Not for Amber or for Sarah, but for the business. And being able to say, it's almost like in a marriage, you know, where you go, is this the hill that I need to die on? Or do you care more about it? Because we've had some decisions where one of us has just cared more about or had a stronger opinion. And it's like, if it matters more to you, then I defer. You know, if you really feel strongly about something and I don't match the level of intensity or vice versa, we defer then. Because it's like, well, this matters more to you, which is better for the business. Like you have a strong opinion about this, you know, strategic partnership or this, you know, engagement that we're going to do. And so, and that's allowed us to, I think, to maintain some strategic partnerships or move forward in certain projects, because one of us can say, hey, I'm at my limit being able to communicate with this person or this client or in this space. But the other person is like, okay, but I can, I still have bandwidth here. And unless this is like a major ethical issue, and that's one of the benefits of a partnership, is you can carry the load some more for others.
Even the conversation I had with the other person who's co-owning and, you know, doing the umbrella company, like one of the things that she admitted was one of the things she struggles with is putting boundaries in place, being comfortable setting boundaries, which is something that you and I do not have a problem with.
Right.
One, because of who we are, but two, because of the work we've put in. We have done a lot around this. We had our individual businesses where we had to kind of learn and trip through putting boundaries down with like clients and family and all of those things. So then we knew by the time we got here, like, this is a really important aspect.
We say this all the time, right? Yeah. Like your entrepreneurship requires you to come face to face with every piece of who you are as a person.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you will not be the best business leader. Great leaders are people who have done good, hard, personal growth work. Because it's hard. You have to come face to face with your relationship with money. You have to come face to face with your relationship with boundaries and what you determine is enough, right? At the end of the day, I've done enough. Or what can wait till tomorrow? Or where am I getting my self-worth from? If this fails, am I going to feel like a failure? Or is it just going to be able to be that failed, you know? Or we tried and it was, I did good work and I'm proud of trying. And it's okay that it didn't work. How are you going to handle failure or having to pivot and all those components? If you're not doing that work and you are coming into being a business leader or an entrepreneur, just be ready to do that work. Like just be ready to know that. And even if you've done some, we're going to peel some more layers off that onion.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of the conversation we had with Luan, I can't remember her last name. She is VP of Spring, which is in Canada. She mentioned the difference of how Canadians view startup and success and how
Americans,
you know, how she essentially says Americans view it. And their view, or at least her view that she's saying collective is, how do we get our founders to fail quick enough and then help them pick up and keep going?
Yep.
Because she said, I feel like it's part of the American way that we have a certain level of tolerance of failure that what you're seeing in Canadian culture was not there. She was like, they kind of like, oh, that didn't work. Let me just stop and I'll just go do something else. And what we want to build is this resilience to failure, which is you are going to fail.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And we say that all the time, to fail.
Yeah.
You gotta fail. Sometimes things got to fall apart before you put them back together. That's how that works.
Yeah.
And so their goal is to try to get their founders to fail as early as possible so that they will see that they can keep going. And it's not too late, right? They don't feel like they've put too much on the line and everything's crashed. I just thought that was so interesting. And talk about building trust, right? You have to both be willing to assume a similar level of risk.
Yep.
And I think that failure thing really demonstrates that. So talking with 50-50 split in order to get an easier frame of reference first, you've got to be able to put it down on paper,
mm-hmm.
right? You need to determine where the buck stops with whom, okay? We each have different expertise. In every partnership, your expertise should differ. It's part mm-hmm. of what makes a good partnership is you complement each other.
Yeah.
So when it comes to PR and marketing, our rule mm-hmm. is it doesn't leave the building without Sarah making final decisions on it.
Yep.
And the same thing if we were to take on any vendors or any of those things that are under that, that is my responsibility. If it's under sales and like management, that is your responsibility because yep. that is where you shine and you have the most experience with it. I can chime in, of course, and I'll have opinions, but at the end of the day, what you think is best is what we're going to go with.
Yeah.
Because that is what we put down on paper.
Yep.
Now, finances, because we're 50-50 split, have to be unanimous. So you put your partnerships in place. We put down what are our rules of engagement. And then we're like, okay, where does the decision-making stop with him? Because it can't all be in one person's place. Mm-hmm. Like, and we tend it to the person's expertise. And some of them in your partnership, they need to be unanimous and equal. After that, right, you have to uphold those boundaries now. And I think one of the ways that we do this and we manage the partnership well is we have days where it's just us.
Yep.
And I was talking to the other person who with the umbrella company about this, and they don't have that. And she felt like there's a lot of tension and a lot of mm-hmm. she's trying to get work done. He's trying to talk to her about ideas. She doesn't want mm-hmm. to shoot it down because they're important, but also she needs to get her work done and she's got time constraints. And he seems to live at the business where she wants to go home to her kid and she feels guilty and all mm-hmm. of these things. And I was like, if we put into place a system that's yep. like, this is what we always have each week to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
When he comes up with a topic that's really good, we say, you know what? Let's put that on the agenda for Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can keep going
yep.
or whatever day it is.
Yeah.
And I think like those type things, and, you know, when we go into meetings with new people or we bring in new partnerships, we share these rules of engagement
yep.
to keep going,
yep.
to put this in place.
Yeah.
And then the very last step is trusting.
Mm-hmm.
You said this the other day. You have to trust mm-hmm. that if something is wrong, I'm going to come to you with it and you yep. don't need to be searching it out.
Right.
Right. We will forever and always name the elephant in the room.
Yep.
Because we are trusting it's going to be dealt with.
Yep.
Even with bringing on, we had a new employee mm-hmm. and he's coming out of burnout and he's switching industries and we know him and we're trying to be sensitive to that. But also like, you know, we're running a company and there's yep. expectations. And there was, I think you talked about like a level of guilt or concern of like, do you really mm-hmm. want to do this? I think that's part of what makes you such a good leader and manager mm. is that you truly consider the whole person.
Mm.
But then, at the end of the day, I have to trust that mm-hmm. he's going to be a grown adult.
Yeah.
If he has an issue with something, he's going to come to me.
Yeah. There's a great saying that says it's culture eats strategy for breakfast.
Absolutely.
Which is so true because if we can have a strategic plan, we can have boundaries, we can have rules of engagement. But it doesn't work unless we do it.
Yeah.
And it starts with us. We have to set the pace.
Yeah.
We have to set the tone and we are required to do it consistently.
And you and I have both been in situations where we've had to manage some form of team.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that has been, I don't know the right word is, but like thrust upon us. I had one where, you know, in the agency, I hired a bunch of people and built mm-hmm. a team, but I also managed ones where like, you're now a team, right?
It's just, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't hand select these people.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to build that. You've right. got to be really upfront and honest
mm-hmm.
and transparent every single day. Yeah. We had an issue with somebody not that long ago where eventually we had to say, hey, are you upset? And two words, we talked about how frustrating it was, but it was a good reminder that not everybody operates like us. Like I should not have to ask you if you're
right. Right, right, right.
I should be able to do my job, focus on my areas, And then if you're upset, you should be able to come to me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And know, right? This is where we're choosing to trust.
Yep.
To choose to trust. Know that I am going to listen and respond and receive it well.
Yep.
If you're going into a business relationship with somebody.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you have to choose trust.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to do that,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to work.
Yeah. You know, in any partnership, you have to make time to work on the business and step out of working in the business, because the in the business stuff can feel very urgent all the time. And it is, except if you do not take time to work on your business, recalibrate, hey, reprioritize, because there have been plenty of times on Mondays where we go, okay, how do we win this week? And there have been things that, hey, that's got to get bumped. Or if someone wants to schedule a meeting, they're going to have to wait till next week, because we need time to be able to plan and prepare, to write a LinkedIn article, to do the work that the meetings produce. We've got to work on the business, not just in the business, to roadmap, to strategically plan. Hey, what are the things we're going to say yes to? Because if you don't do that, you then are making decisions by the seat of your pants. Do we have the time and capacity to pursue this other thing? Is it in line with our mission? Is it in line with our values? Is it in line with our goals? Is it going to distract us from our goals? Is that goal still the right goal to have? I mean, a couple months ago, we were doing some strategic planning, and I remember us, I go, hold on. I said, we need to make a conscious choice right now that we're going to make this pivot. Because if we do this, it's going to pull us away from this. And that's okay if we want to do that, but we have to make a conscious decision and an intentional decision to make that pivot and to make that shift, because it means that this now can't happen, or not at the same pace that we thought it was going to happen.
That was a successful pivot. I just want to.
It was a very successful pivot.
It was a good one for us.
Yeah.
For all those who are waiting with bated breath.
It worked. Yeah. But if it hadn't worked, we at least could point back and say, hey, but we chose. We didn't just willy-nilly like, oh my gosh, how did we get here? You know, we really did consciously and intentionally decide together, this is something we're going to do. So if you're in that space where you feel like you're in a partnership and one is like, you're like, I got to get work done. And then this one's like, but we got to talk about the ideas and what do we want to do? You have to set time.
Yeah.
Whether it's once a week or once a month or whatever, you have to build in time to work on your business and not all in your business.
One of the things that she had said to me when I brought that up, she's like, well, we don't have time. And I was like, look, you're Make not going to get any time back.
Yeah.
Right? You getting more staff and you getting more revenue is actually going to take away your time, not add to it.
Correct.
Right, it will free up some things mentally, but unless you have a boundary in place from the beginning, there's not a we'll wait until this point to do this. No.
Right.
You do it now.
Right.
And everybody, all of your employees, learn to respect that boundary and that place. Don't try to call and talk to us during this time.
Yeah.
We have trained you enough that you should be on your own.
Yep. Well, and we talk about this all the time when we do our initial brand process with clients on their values. We say you have to get exceptionally clear on your values because that is how you then determine your decision making.
Yep.
If we value making sure that the company grows at a steady pace, the way that that value is now enacted in our company is we book 2 hours a week for the leadership team to come together and make sure we're still moving forward. What do people need? What are your challenges? I mean, part of what we do every morning, you and I check in. What were your wins? What are your challenges? What do you need from me? And what are you grateful for? And it's 5 minutes, maybe, but it keeps us on pace. And it says, okay, hey, today, actually, I'm at my limit. I need to cut this. Can this go to tomorrow? But it keeps you on track. Or even a week or two ago, I was like, hey, can you take this meeting? And you were like, no, I need you on it. Okay, great. Like,
I felt so bad.
No, but that was good and it was necessary. And the reason it worked was because we are consistent to say, and I knew that if you said, no, I need you on this, like you needed me on it. You know, it was like, okay, then I got to dig deep and rally and come. But it's because we've built in consistent check-ins. We're consistently setting time aside because it's something we value deeply to make sure that we're on the same page. You have to get exceptionally clear on what you value within your business and then make your decisions from that and not from a reactive state. And if you find that you're getting reactive, you go, hold on, why am I reacting? Do I value something I didn't realize I valued? That's another piece too, where you kind of go, why is this getting me so riled up or anxious? Or do we need to look back at our values? Do we need to add something? Do we need, because there have been several times you and I have had conversations where we go, we need to add that in to the rules of engagement or to our values, or, you know, because we didn't know until the situation came up. But it requires you setting aside time to go, we need to pay attention to that.
Thanks for joining us for part one of this conversation on building trust in business partnerships. We hope you found it insightful. Stay tuned for part two, where we dive even deeper into navigating power dynamics and ensuring every voice is heard. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share this episode if you enjoyed it, and we will see you next time.